Accession number 23088, Reel 1.
This is Pat Wythe, and it's Reel 1. So if I could ask you, first of all, Pat, to tell me something about your family background. Whereabouts were you born and brought up?
I was born in Shillong, which is then Assam, India, the capital of Assam. My father was a mining engineer who was working in the Naga Hills, now known as Nagaland. And, of course, it had a very prominent part in the war. But this was... I was born in 1925. It was a very isolated place where my parents lived. Kongnyu was the name. There was just a colliery there, which he was in charge of, and it was very isolated. I know people used to come and visit and stay, but sometimes nobody would come for months at a time, and we were the only... we weren't the only English family. There was an engineer, and there was an assistant. So there were three English men, and sometimes their wives and families there. But it was a very limited social life. They used to play tennis, and we had a tennis court. And anyway, as a very small child, I was there. My father used to get home leave every 3.5 years, and then we would come back to England for the summer. And so I was there until I was 7, which involved 2 home leaves in between. And of course we would travel then by boat. It used to take about 3 weeks to get home. We would probably travel from the Naga Hills to Calcutta by train. Of course, there was no road transport where we lived. You couldn't drive a car there. Nobody, you either had to ride a horse or be carried by coolies in a dandy and to the railhead. And there was a railhead not very far away where they used to have the coal used to go from there. There were coal tubs to join the main line. I can't remember the distances, but you travelled by trolley on the, once you went to the railhead, the trolley went to the main town, which was Nasra. It was called Nasra. And I can't quite remember where we caught the train when we went to Calcutta, but it was probably from Nasra, but it may not have been. But it was the main line, the Assam line. And then you crossed the Brahmaputra on a flat ferry, which was large. I remember that from my last trip when I was 7. And you spent some time on the ferry going backwards and forwards. It was a big flat. And eventually, when it was time for your train on the other side, you got off the ferry, caught your train, and went to Calcutta. Most of the journeys in India, of course, involved overnight travel. But then my parents were on the journey home now. We would go to Calcutta, get on a train to Bombay, and catch a boat there. Or you could go from Calcutta, but that went round India, and it was faster to cross the continent by train. Or the subcontinent, I think I should say. Anyway, and then from there it would take about 2 to 3 weeks. And I remember when I was 7, I came home with my mother, because I'd been very ill. I had malaria as a small child there in the Naga Hills, and it used to recur. I remember it used to recur about once a fortnight on Saturday at lunchtime. And they were worried about me. And those days we took quinine, but of course there was no, none of these malaria, anti-malaria pills you take now when you go abroad. Anyway, my mother decided, my parents decided that she should come home, rent a house, and my sister was at boarding school. My brother was starting, he was an articled chartered accountant, so he would live at home. My sister would come home for holidays, and I would attend a local day school, which I did. And this went on until 1939, when I was scheduled to go to boarding school. My sister by this time had left her school, and I should, she was going out to India with my mother, and they were booked, and my father, they were all booked on the boat to go together at the end of the summer, and I would have gone into school then. But then, when the war was imminent, my father was a key man because he knew about getting coal out of the ground, and so he was sent for. He was on the list of key men. He had to go to Greenock, and he was put on a troop ship and shipped to back to India quickly before the war. Oh no, I think it was just after the war had broken out, because I remember we were all on holiday at Cricketh when I heard the speech that we were at war. But he was called almost immediately after that. And then, of course, my parents, my sister and mother, they had to wait for a passage for a short time, but they got a passage on the Strathaven. And that's rather strange, because eventually all the family seemed to travel on the Strathaven. Anyway, they took me to school and left me there in North Wales, and I should have stayed there until I finished my education, and I would probably have gone to university and so on. I would have seen them after another 3.5 years if the war hadn't broken out. But I was only there a year when France fell. And of course I remember it was very safe where we were. We only had one air raid warning while I was there. And I remember going down to the shelters. I was then 13, and we went down into the shelter and spent some time, but that was the only time we had any problems there. But of course the planes were bombing Liverpool at the time. And anyway, when France fell, my parents decided to send for me, and they got in touch with Thomas Cook and said, get her out here by air. And I would have flown on the flying boat service through the Mediterranean, but the Italians came into the war and the service was suspended. So I had to wait until Thomas Cook could find me a berth on a boat, and it had turned out to be the Strathaven again. And the matron from school, it was summer holiday time, and the matron, we had broken up, and a few of us girls who hadn't got anywhere to go stayed at school. But the matron took me to Liverpool, to the Adelphi Hotel. We had dinner together, and she handed me over to Thomas Cook. The representative then took me to a room where I was to share with two other girls who were sisters. They were Liverpool girls, and their parents were in India as well. So, of course, we talked late into the night, and then the air raid siren went. And one girl started to get dressed and the other girl started to cry, and I wasn't sure quite what to do, so I put on my house coat and we all tripped down to the cellar. Thomas Cook collected us. I say Thomas Cook, but of course it's the representative. He collected us and took us down to the cellar, and we stayed there 2 or 3 hours. I didn't hear anything, but then he brought us, we were able to go back to our rooms and we slept and we had breakfast. I can't remember breakfast, but I was taken to the, we were taken to the boat by, in a little group, by Thomas Cook. So we were put on the Strathaven, and I was given a very nice cabin, first class, with a telephone. We loved the telephone. We used to plague the boy who was on the switchboard with calls. But anyway, I can't remember the details of the day, but I was leaning over the rail and looking disconsolately at Liverpool when somebody came and slapped me on the back. And it turned out to be my best friend from school. Her parents had sent for her, and she hadn't been handed over to Thomas Cook, but I think a relation had taken her to the Adelphi. Oh, not to the Adelphi, probably straight to the boat. Anyway, I was delighted to see her because she was much tougher than I, and I'm always grateful to her because she toughened me up at school. She used to look after me. But anyway, she was the Viceroy's surgeon's daughter, and her name was Barbara Williamson. Sadly, I've lost contact with her years ago because she never did much work at school and she was more or less illiterate at this time. You know, she just didn't take any interest in school, and she was really a brave girl. But anyway, we had a marvellous time on the boat, and there were other girls from the same school. There was one from Ceylon, and there was a little girl called Pamela Dempster, and she is the sister of Nigel Dempster, the columnist. But she was very small, and we used to look after Pamela. Her nickname was Dodo. I remember one day seeing her looking rather poorly, and we were given ice creams. This was still a peacetime trip. It wasn't a sort of troop ship sort of trip. We were first class, food, everything was just as it always had been on the P&O runs. And we had beef tea in the cold weather in the mid-morning and ice creams. And she'd had 5 ice creams that day. I remember this pistachio ice cream. So I don't know what's happened to Dodo either, because we didn't keep in touch.
Were you in a convoy? Did you have any protection?
Yes. But the thing about it, I did find out that on my boat there were 500 children. I think the complement is about 1,000, one of those P&O boats. And there were 500 children, 300 unaccompanied by any adult. P&O had employed 3 matrons, and these were people mostly who were engaged to probably people in the civil service or army or working in India, and they wanted to get out to get married. And of course they hadn't, they could only scratch the surface to control the 300. Though we were very well behaved in those days, not like now. Anyway, we were in an enormous convoy. Before this, we had air raids 2 nights. But the first night, the steward just couldn't wake me. I don't know what he would have done if he could have done. I'd locked the door. And of course, I was exhausted because the night before I'd been talking half the night and in the air raid shelter the other half. But we were there for 2 or 3 days, but they were having raids every night.
This was in Liverpool,
in Liverpool, in the docks.
Yes, you were actually there on the ship, were you?
Oh, yes, we were put on the ship, and then the convoy was assembling, you see, and they didn't sail until they were all there. And it was a very large convoy, and I remember seeing the ships when we did sail. In all directions, you saw ships. And some of them, of course, peeled off to North America. We went round the north of Ireland. I'm sure we went round the north of Ireland and right out into the Atlantic. A lot of them peeled off to various places, sort of probably Canada and America, and even South America. The first port of call was Freetown, but we weren't allowed ashore. They said there was cholera, but of course they wouldn't have let 500 children loose, I'm sure. Then the next, we didn't see any action, but there was another ship. I know that they were dive bombed. They weren't hit, but although machine gunned, I think it was might have been the Strathnava, but not in our convoy. That was another time. I knew girls who had been on that one. But then the next port of call was Cape Town, and we were in there a week because one of the ships that were still in the convoy was having boiler trouble. And we had to wait till it was fixed. But we were only allowed ashore one, not every day, I don't think. As we were unaccompanied children, we should have gone to the governor's tea party. He very kindly laid on a tea party for us. But Barbara and I decided, she was a year older than me, she would be 14, we decided, we didn't like the idea of a tea party for children. And so we knew a girl who was 16, which was the adult age, and she took us off the ship. And then we did some, investigating and shopping around Cape Town. I remember we tried to go up Table Mountain. We never found the place we were supposed to get on. But we did a lot of shopping. First of all, we decided we were thirsty, and we went into a downtown bar where we had lemonade, and they wouldn't take any money from us. I remember that. And then I remember going shopping and buying presents for my mother and father. And people in the shops asked us questions, and we wouldn't answer. We had been told that careless talk costs lives. We'd seen all those posters in England, and we knew we weren't supposed to say anything. And incidentally, I remember I had to go to the dentist just before I left school, and he asked me when I was sailing, and I wouldn't tell him. And the woman who took me to the dentist said, "You were very good, you didn't tell him." So that was interesting. But we were very security conscious as children. And we had a lovely time, though. We did our shopping, and I can't remember in full detail. I'd been to Cape Town a few years ago, not long ago, and of course I couldn't recognise the place. Where we were tied up is now all, has been reclaimed. And the waterside development is all there, I think, because we just walked off the boat and up into the main street of Cape Town quite easily. It wasn't very far. It's a long time ago. So from Cape Town, then we went straight to Bombay. The whole journey took 6 weeks, including the week in Cape Town. I'm just trying to think what day we arrived or what day we sailed. It was August we sailed, and we arrived, I think, mid-September, about the 15th. I might have a note somewhere, but I can't remember.
And this was 1940. Yes, it's very interesting because what you're describing is a sort of mass evacuation.
Absolutely, because there were 500 on my boat. I think the Orion, which was an Orient Line boat, would have a similar number of children. So that There'd be, I'm sure there'd be about 1,000 in my convoy. And that it wasn't only that convoy. I've met a lot of people. In fact, very strange, I was invited to supper in Beccles a little time ago, and a friend of mine, whose sister was at the same school, she had been evacuated on that boat, and there was also another person, and we were all on the Strathaven. And of course we didn't get to know each other because you stayed with your friends, your school friends and so on. So anyway, it took 6 weeks, but there were so many children. The parents were very anxious about us, you see, when France fell.
Yes, I was wondering, you know, because it was quite a risk.
Oh, it was.
Getting you on the water at that time, wasn't it?
But I think, I can't remember when, do you remember the city of Benares sank with all those evacuees on the way to Canada? I think that's when they stopped sending for children, but I can't remember the date of it. I think it might have been after I sailed, you see. But I think then, I don't know about more people going to India then, but by that time, I think we were all out there. And there were so many, and we were sent off to different schools eventually. But anyway, if I just finish the journey, my father was waiting. He'd been waiting a week for me in Bombay, but he seemed to have much more information. He knew the shipping movements perfectly well. I was a bit shocked, I remember, because we were so indoctrinated that we shouldn't say anything. How he'd found out which ships were where, I don't know. Anyway, I landed, we sort of met up, and then we stayed at the Taj Mahal Hotel overnight. And I was feeling rather queasy and ill, I remember. And it was two nights and a day across India to Asansol. Actually, the railway station Sitarampur, which is on the East Indian Railway, where we lived. So we made that journey, and I was feeling really quite ill. And it turned out I'd got dysentery, which I'd obviously caught on the boat. I think several people had it. But I'm just trying to think. Anyway, we turned up safely, got safely there, and I was ill. And then, of course, they decided I must finish my education. I was 14 here, and they decided to send me to a missionary school in South India. The school term started, this was September, and the school didn't start till January. The cold weather was the holiday time, so that at boarding schools up in the hills, you went there all summer, and you went home for the cold weather season for two to 3 months. So they sent me to Hebron, which was a well-established missionary school. They thought that might be a good idea to send me to an established school rather than one which had been started up. There were several started for evacuees like myself. But it used to take me 4 days to get to school in the Nilgiris, which was quite interesting. But of course, from where we were 150 miles from Calcutta. So we travelled by train to Calcutta, sort of in the morning. And then that night I would be put on a train. And that was two nights and a day to Madras. And then you had to stay all that day in Madras. And then another night, another train up to the Nilgiri Hills overnight, and then you got on a small train which went up the hill. And that is, railway buffs in this country still go on package tours to visit this railway. It's a very famous one. like the Darjeeling one. Anyway, I was there for all that year, that's 41, and part of 42, but when the Japanese came into Burma, the parents thought they'd better move me up to Simla, to another school, and if Mother had to evacuate herself, she could pick me up on the way out. And so I was sent to Sherfield, which was a school started for girls like myself. And my old friend from school in Wales greeted me. She was there already. So that was very nice. So we met up again. And so I was there for that year, the rest of that year, and most of the next year. But the education, I took my school certificate, which was senior Cambridge exam, at the first school in the Nilgiris. And I remember taking the exam, and we had to write in pencil and take carbon copies in case the ship was sunk. With our the first lot of answers, and that was, I think it was very easy that year. We all seemed to do quite well. They'd made it easier, I think, because they knew that so many children had been evacuated. Then we, but at Sherfield, I did do a slightly higher education. We had a very nice teacher called Mrs. Hardy, whose husband was ICS, and she was up there for, and ladies who could did, this was a sort of war work, you know, teaching, or everyone did try to do some war work, and she was very good. She sort of made us read, do a lot of reading, and we learnt about people like Virginia Woolf and so on, you know. She really extended our education, but there was nothing formal. And but anyway, I'm just trying to think. Ah, yes. Then of course I would be 18 or nearly 18. And you know, I felt it was time I left school, so I stayed at home, but I did some Red Cross work. I can't remember if it was the Red Cross or John's Ambulance, but...
Where would home have been then?
Oh, in Bengal, sorry. In Bengal, my father then being the chief mining engineer for Shaw Wallace. And he was based there, about 150 miles from Calcutta.
Because I suppose he had to move with the Japanese advance into Burma, did he?
No, he'd been promoted. Yes.
So he'd left the Naga Hills sometime before?
He left in 39, came home on leave, and then when he went back, he was given this other post, you see. In fact, I don't think they ever... The Japanese never overran the Naga Hills. The Nagas were all fighting on our side. And, of course, there were a lot of soldiers. And that was interesting, actually, because a jeep could get up to where we were living. I told you there was no road transport, but a jeep could go. But I don't know what happened and who was there at that time. But there was somebody would be there. I'm sure it wasn't overrun, because they were stopped at Kohima, which was rather south, I think. If we look, eventually, perhaps I'll show you on the map.
But I suppose that whole area was much more...
Oh, there were soldiers. Oh, yes. Mm. And there were airfields up, you know, the Brahmaputra plain, and they were flying goods into China and everything over the hump from there. There was a lot of military activity, because eventually... I helped in this hospital for a while. I did occupational therapy, you know, I made people do bits of weaving, and I remember there was a professional footballer. This was a military hospital, which had been a school. It was taken over. And I remember the only one I could get to do any embroidery was this professional footballer, who obviously felt he hadn't got anything to prove. So that was good. But anyway, I remember the therapy was more in teasing me than doing any weaving or anything. And I used to have great fun. And I used to also go into the Indian wards. And I remember that they used to weave string bags. And I used to give them enough stuff. They were allowed to keep the first string bag.